Would you like to work closer to home, save money on gas, and be rewarded for your hard work and attendance? Then Bellisio Foods is looking for you. That's right, Bellisio Foods is now hiring for multiple positions and shifts with great employee benefits, an on-site health clinic, competitive wages, and advancement opportunities. Bellisio Foods is a company that truly values their employees. Apply online at bellisiofoods.com/careers.
At Vinton County National Bank, we believe in supporting the areas where we live and work. Now, we'd like to honor those who also serve our communities. Our new Community Champions account is especially for first responders, veterans, active military, and anyone employed in the fields of healthcare or education. This account offers rewards, discounts, and other benefits to those who give so much to others. Vinton County National Bank, rewarding those who serve.
Everyone, and welcome to the morning show right here on Main Street TV, where, believe it or not, the sun is shining this morning.
Oh, it feels like spring, doesn't it?
It is January 26th. It is currently, it doesn't tell me on there because it's on Celsius, a lot warmer than it was last week.
I believe.
And the sun is shining, and it's Friday, Pete.
I think when I got up very early this morning, my thermometer was in the high 50s.
Was it really?
Yeah,
let's look and see.
Go ahead and check that out. See where we're at now.
Let's see what it says. Where is my weather? There's my weather. It is currently in Jackson. It says cloudy, but the sun was out when I was out there, and 51 degrees. So okay. There you go.
All right. Might even be dropping just a little bit, but still warmer
nice.
Than you. Remember where we came from?
Yes.
About a week or so
yes.
ago. My gosh.
We have markedly improved, yes.
Right.
Busted pipes and the whole nine yards.
Right. So. We went from, about zero type weather, much colder wind chill, snow on the ground, to worrying about flooding several days later.
I'm going to tell you what. Yeah, it is, shall we say, a bit damp in the grass and whatnot.
That's usually one thing you can count on when you get this much warmer than usual weather in the winter. There's usually accompanied by rain.
Oh, yeah.
Almost always.
You got it.
But anyway, hey, we got a lot of ground to cover today, so we'll get right on it. Now, folks who were paying attention there as we did our prelude there with the Bellisio commercial and so forth, you saw some extra footage there.
Yes.
That was a promo that our Jeremiah Shaver put together. He was one of our many staff members of Total Media that was there to welcome the Cincinnati Reds caravan.
Can you believe it? Right here in little old Jackson,
Ohio. In little old Jackson. This is the at least the second year in a row the Reds caravan has come.
So cool.
We are on the map. And one of the reasons we are on the map, the work that J.J. Hale has done to make sure that we are a Reds affiliate. So,
yes.
You know, we are VIPs to the Reds, too.
Yes, we are.
We help.
So cool.
We help get their games out to our listening audience in southeastern Ohio. And the Reds on this caravan, you know, they do this for 2 or 3 weeks in the winter just before spring training. And it is just kind of like a primer. It's kind of like, you know, to tease the upcoming baseball season, even though it's January. They always have sometimes ex-players, sometimes current players, sometimes up-and-coming minor leaguer players that the baseball people would know, and usually an executive or two. Sometimes, if you're lucky, you might get one of the Reds broadcasters in. But they go off in different teams to different areas all over the tri-state area. I'm sure they go into Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia,
yes,
and, of course, here in Ohio, in southeastern Ohio. They were in Athens as well as Jackson, I believe, on Thursday.
You wonder if the guys enjoy doing that or if they're like, oh, this is really uncomfortable, I'd rather just play baseball. I was thinking about that. I was asking Hayden about that. I was like, I wonder what they say about that. Like, I'm sure some of them are a lot more social than others, and some of them would make it would be awkward for them where others are like super outgoing. You just never know.
No, you don't know for sure, but I know that the caravan event, I was not able to attend, but I know the caravan event went well yesterday. Our Red Thompson Jr. was there. He's a Reds fan of long standing. Took some pictures for us, and so we'll show those now. Hayden, whenever you can put those up there. But this is there's JJ Hale, of course. They're on the right introducing some people, and in the picture there, this is a name that most Reds fan would know. On the left, in a uniform, although he's retired, is Todd Benzinger. Todd Benzinger was the first baseman on the 1990 World Series team.
Oh, cool.
If you're a Reds fan, that's one of your favorite teams of all time.
Yeah.
Not only that was under Lou Piniella. Not only did they win, and there he is, a closer shot with Sean Pender, who is one of the executives with the Cincinnati Reds who was on this particular caravan trip. But Todd Benzinger claimed to fame. In addition to being on the team, he caught the last out in Oakland. Remember that year, the Reds were very good, but they were big underdogs to the Oakland A's, who had been kind of like the powerhouse in baseball. Oh, La Russa was the manager there, and the Reds won four straight.
Yeah,
over Oakland.
Just killed it.
Right, and of course, you know, you have the typical scene of the youngsters there that are thrilled to meet the baseball players. That young man there with Reds number 23, it's Brenner Wooten. He is the young son of Doug and Jennifer Wooten.
Yes.
And I think he's an elementary school athlete there. Just like his dad, he's going to be good in athletics. And he was thrilled to get Todd Benzinger's autograph and Sean Pender's autograph as well. And there were scenes there. We don't have a shot of it, but Gapper, one of the Reds mascots.
Yes.
They have more than one mascot. Gapper is kind of like the Sesame Street animal type.
Yeah, you got to see him
kind of in the video. Not Mr. Red or Rosie Red. That is, of course, another key member of the Total Media team, Rodney Tomlin there, talking with a behind-the-scenes very important person, Chris Henry.
That's right.
Who is our most veteran sales representative. So it was a big event. You know, all the Reds got introduced, and they took their time to sign autographs. That is Hayden Milliken of our staff, who was thrilled to get autographs from the players. There were a couple of minor league players there who were real up-and-comers. Among the ones that were there was Reese Hines, Sal Stewart, Julian Aguilar, who was the minor league pitcher of the year in the Red system. Now, he was only at Class A, which is one of the low levels, but he is considered to be a major league prospect already.
Awesome.
And so he is likely going to be somebody someday. You never know, but he was there in the entourage. Andrew Abbott, who had some very good moments last year in his rookie season with the Reds, a left-handed pitcher. He was the current major league player who was part of the group in Cincinnati. Now, so on Total Media, there's a big change in how we're going to do the Reds. It has been on 1330 AM and 105.3 FM, our companion FM station.
Sure.
This year, it's going to be on the Bowl, 97.7 FM.
Okay.
Which is a little bit of a stronger signal there.
Okay.
And so, you know, all the Reds fans that have listened to us on Total Media, or listened to the Reds games on Total Media, we will be switching to 97.7 FM. Stronger signal, it will better serve a larger area there. So that's good news for us and good news for of course, the Reds as well. We're going to have some of the coverage that Red Thompson Jr. came up with in our paper next week, but we wanted to let you know that that happened. Now, a lot of people have asked the question, you know, you've seen some of the things we post on social media, you know, that would like to have come. This was not a public event per se where anyone could just come or even buy a ticket. It was considered a publicity thing.
Right.
And it was up to us to publicize the Reds. There were some extra guests there that are involved with the station, staff members, advertisers, et cetera. There was a decent crowd there, but it wasn't anything, you know, that we wanted to keep anything out. It's just the structure of how they want to do it. A lot of places they go, it's not a big venue. It was a Park's Edge Event Center, which of course has a big room, but many places it's just, you know, somewhere where they can have a small meeting and then publicize it through TV, radio, newspaper, et cetera. So that was a big event for Total Media and the Reds, and we look forward to broadcasting the Reds this season. And Jennifer, I know as a woman of the world who knows what's going on in sports, you know that the Cincinnati Reds surprised a lot of people last year.
They did.
With the young team. They were projected by many of the experts to maybe be a last place team in the Central Division. And I tell you what, they brought up some young players early in the season, and they surprised a lot of people. They won something like 10 or 11 in a row right before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
They were positioned in close to or in first place. They were just behind. They didn't have...
Who would have ever thought?
Their second half of the season was not as good, but because of the youth of the team, almost completely rebuilt, very excited for what they could do in the future. They did make some improvements to fill in some holes and strengthen some maybe weaknesses to make them better. And I think I've not seen some of the early baseball magazines. I'm sure some of them have already hit the newsstands. I'm guessing that they will be considered a contender, at least, in the Central Division of the National League.
Good deal.
So we can look forward to that. Okay, we'll turn to the hard news now, Jennifer.
Okay.
And this is a report that probably a lot of people outside of Oak Hill have not heard about yet. Yeah. We're going to tell you about now. A lot of people in Oak Hill already know about it because it has become quickly an issue in Oak Hill that is in the hands of Oak Hill Village Council. They're going to have to decide what to do or decide what they can do and not do about it. But here is the situation. The Iron Oak Center, which used to be the Davis home for the agent,
yes,
there on Washington Street, not too far from the pool or whatever, there is a proposal. Patrick Ball is the owner of the facility. Patrick, well-known resident of Jackson, but with strong Oak Hill connections, lived in the Oak Hill area, graduated from Oak Hill High School, has invested in Oak Hill, mainly in the Iron Oak Center.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty big building where there is room for more businesses there. He would like to bring, that is Patrick Ball, by the way, on the right there, and during the scene of the council meeting last Tuesday evening. Those are the pictures that Hayden is putting up. They're from that meeting. But Patrick Ball would like to bring the Phoenix Treatment Center as a tenant into the Iron Oak Center.
Okay.
It is described as an outpatient mental health and substance abuse recovery program. So, you know, folks who are overcoming substance abuse problems and mental health problems, they come there for counseling and for treatment.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is in the Davis Home for the Aged, now the Iron Oak Center, is in a residential area. And apparently, many of the residents are concerned about the Iron Oak Center having this facility there because of the nature of it and the clientele, I guess. But there was about 75 people there that were concerned. That lady there that you see, she's not talking to her phone. She's reading something off her phone.
Sure.
That is Morgan Larkin. She is a representative of the Phoenix Treatment Center. And she is reading a letter from the Phoenix Treatment Center company president. Now, the Phoenix Treatment Center is regional. It's just not that facility in Oak Hill. There's actually one, Jennifer. A lot of folks don't even know it's there. It's out on McCarty Lane here in Jackson.
Yeah.
Hasn't been there all that long. There are other facilities, several other facilities in southeastern Ohio, including one in McConnellsville in Morgan. I'm bringing that up because that has been something that apparently has helped spark the protest. There's some of the folks who were at the meeting. You see they're standing up because I think it became a standing room only situation there in the meeting room at the Oak Hill Village Council. This was last Tuesday evening.
So is this a live-in, like a residential treatment center, or is it like a Dave thing?
I'm not sure whether they're short-term stays or not, Jennifer, with this. It didn't describe itself as a residential center. So that is something that I cannot say for sure right now. We're still gathering information on it. That was not stated at the meeting exactly, you know, how the clients, you know, if they have short-term stays, longer-term stays, or they're just there through appointments.
Were all those people in opposition of it?
Apparently so. Now, Patrick Ball feels, I mean, not only would he like to have the tenant, but he feels that, you know, I mean, he said, hey, folks, I think we all know that, you know, that there's drug and mental health problems here and everywhere else. This is a way to get a convenient location to help those folks. You know, it's a good thing, not a bad thing. But some of the neighbors and people in that area, maybe some people outside of the neighborhood even, are concerned about the proximity, you know, to their homes and like that. And
it's a fair discussion, I guess.
There was a letter that got circulated somehow amongst some of the people who have concerns and opposition from a businessman in McConnellsville who felt like Oak Hill would not want this facility because of some of the problems associated with the clientele of the facility in McConnellsville. Because they're thinking that the same thing might happen at Oak Hill. What they said was the Facebook post from the McConnellsville resident, his name was Rhett Matheny, and this Facebook post was printed and circulated among the residents.
Okay.
Here is what he posted, and this is a funeral home director owner, and so he's a, you know, a respected person in McConnellsville. Red did follow up and check him out.
Make sure he's a legitimate person.
It wasn't just some posting. I know on Facebook you never know,
no.
But this was somebody who was a real person who was posting about what he considers to be a real problem. He says, this has happened in my town of McConnellsville. It is a complete disaster. Our EMS has had too many ODs. I've had so many deaths at the funeral home because of drug overdoses. The biggest problem is that these people come here. Their family moves in to be close to them, and that triples the problem. We have 75 homeless people in our town of 5,000, and he blames that, you know, to be connected with the fact that this facility is there. So, to be fair, it was mainly opposition that came out at this meeting, and Patrick Ball defending, you know, that this is a good thing, not a bad thing. And so, how does Village Council come into this? Because it is private property and all.
Right.
Well, it's a zoning question.
Oh.
It's in a residential area, and the Oak Hill Village zoning code is old. I know that they've talked about updating it. So the village officials didn't really make any comment. They knew, I think, that these people were going to come, and they'd have to kind of study the situation to see what they could do and not do. Maybe they can't do anything. But it's in a residential area, and it's known that the Adena Health Center, which has a clinic there in the Iron Oak Center, they way back when however long that, you know, clinic came there, they got a variance. So at that time, they had to get a variance. So that probably means that the Phoenix Treatment Center would have to get a variance too. Joe Kirby, who is the solicitor, is checking into this.
So what is it zoned right now?
It's zoned residential.
The old Davis home property is zoned, but there's been businesses in it.
Right. Well, I think what it is, the Davis home may have been a grandfathered. It was there before there was zoning, which means, you know, you have the grandfather protection. But then since then, after the Davis home closed, Patrick Ball bought it.
Right. There was like a Mexican restaurant in there.
Yes,
and there were several.
There's a beauty salon in there too now. I think there was a bakery in there once, you know. I think those are the three businesses that are in there now. But the village council may have to make a decision on a variance, which means that they could prevent it from coming. So it could be in their lap. They may take a hands-off attitude and say that, you know, they think the business is good. It's good for Oak Hill. We don't necessarily agree that, you know, measuring all things, that it's a bad thing. Or they could say, hey, listen, it looks like there's entrenched opposition in the neighborhood. They are politicians, remember.
Sure.
Everybody gets elected by the public. If there's that much opposition, you know, be stewards and say, we're not going to grant the variance because too many people are against it. So that's kind of laying it out. Once again, this has not really come out in the news yet. It will come out in Saturday's paper. I give Red Thompson Jr. a lot of credit for the story he did. He made a couple calls for follow-up information.
Interesting.
And part one of his coverage will be in the Saturday paper. It is following up, looking at the zoning issue a little closer in a follow-up story. So that's a big situation right now in Oak Hill. You've heard that acronym NIMBY, not in my backyard. It's one of those things where, you know, an argument could be made. Hey, listen, you know, it's private property. This is a good thing. They do good things. And then you have the rights of the property owners. And one of the things I always say, I know you're a business person and a property owner. You always have some legitimate concerns about what's around you.
Sure, absolutely.
And what that does to your property and its value and so forth.
Oh, that makes
and
there, sense.
That was brought up as one of the concerns as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's mainly just a concern, merited or not, warranted or not, about, you know, the type of facility.
Hey, listen, it's open discussion in a public setting. This is how it should work.
Right. That part is good. That part is good.
You know, that's how it should be.
If some information can come out that allays the fears of some of the residents there. And of course, kind of backtrack there. The pool is in that neighborhood. So you got a lot of kids. Not too far away is Oak Hill Elementary School, which houses all the elementary kids in the Oak Hill School District. So, and there is also right there at the Margaret Ann Pool, there is now park facilities there. You know, they remember they just did the pickleball and basketball court over again there, and they have a dog park there as well. So, you know, it is a public place. Not only the residents, but a lot of the public come there, and a lot of families and kids. So, all right, we'll turn now to city government in Jackson. And last Monday, Jackson Mayor Randy Evans gave the State of the City thing.
Okay.
You know, you always hear about the president doing the State of the Union speech every year, and then the governor does the State of the State. Well, it's written into some municipal codes or state law that, you know, mayors are supposed to do a State of the City. I don't think that anybody will arrest you if you don't do it, and you can turn in a written report.
Well, but it's a good thing to do, though.
Yeah, in Jackson, the tradition has been before Randy, with Randy Heath, who was his predecessor, to do a State of the City. I remember Mayor Evans doing a State of the City. I remember Burley Euler doing a State of the City back on the city side.
Yeah.
But Randy gave his speech at last Monday night's Jackson City Council meeting. We'll have a big story in Saturday's paper kind of detailing the highlights. It was about a 10 to 15 minute speech with a lot of succinct, but with a lot of detail. And I thought Randy did an excellent job. He kind of went back to when he was elected in 2019, what his idea was, what his general goals were going in starting 2020. What's going on now, and then I think most important, what lies in front of us. And so let's talk about what he wants to do coming up in the next year. And you know, I think he's going to be coming up for breath here if he does all this stuff. One of the big things that is going to happen is the city income tax, which, I mean, has allowed him and his administration to do so much more than what could have been done before.
Yes, for sure.
Infrastructure. Right at the top of the stack is, of course, the street paving program, which is going on. Well, that was, this was with his, he was the one who pushed the income tax. He got council to go along with him to put it on the ballot. And then even though it had failed in the past, I mean, he did spearhead the effort to get it passed, and it passed. It wasn't like overwhelming, but it wasn't nip and tuck either. He got that income tax passed, and he wanted to put a sunset clause in it, which I thought was very accountable.
Yes.
In other words, it's not going to run forever.
Right.
He did a 5-year thing. So really, it does not run out until the end of 2025, but he wants to put it on this year for two reasons. First of all, if it would fail, you know, you have more time to get it passed before it would run out. Also, he's looking ahead to planning, all right? He wants to plan for the next 5 years after the income tax. If there's not an income tax, that's going to, of course, greatly hinder what can and cannot be done. So anyway.
Yes, big time.
So we can look for, and we'll have a little bit more in depth on that in an upcoming story, not in this broad brush state of the city speech story, but we will have about the plans to put the income tax on the ballot. But it will be, if he goes forward with what he announced, it will be on the ballot in November.
Okay.
And it will be 1.5%. And one of the big changes it will be mainly what has happened before, half to support the police department and half to support infrastructure, mm-hmm. with the street paving program being one of those things. Well, this time he wants to use the percent, the half or the half of it that goes to the police to also help the fire department.
Okay.
That would be extra money for the fire department. Technically, that's not written into the law now.
Gotcha.
So anyway, that's coming. So some of the other things that are happening that we can look forward to, they're planning on updating the city's zoning code. It's 40 years old, and they're going to have a meeting on that on the first meeting in February to decide how to do that. A person who or a company that does zoning plans for city is going to be there to make a presentation. So that may be coming. The city is also going to plan to repaint the Apple Tower. You know, you have to do that every now
like
and then.
I feel like that just got painted, but I know it didn't.
I think it looks all right, but, you know, I guess it's time.
Yeah, it's...
I haven't climbed it to take a close look.
Definitely not.
Okay, they're going to do a complete overhaul of the city's website. They do this in Wellston, and they're talking about doing it in Jackson, and that is going to a system where you use city-owned trash cans.
Yes.
Right. I mean, there's been some controversy in Wellston because, you know, it was change and some people for it weren't for it. But I think that the Wellston City Administration would say it's working well. That is where I think that you the resident would buy the trash can.
Yes.
But it is a city. It's a city trash can. And then so there's uniformity there.
Yes.
On the trash cans. Mm-hmm. And I think they can use different equipment to pick up the trash way. Because they're...
I mean, it's like in Columbus and, you know, all the cities, they have their set trash cans that you use. And they have their trucks can pick those up, dump them, and, you know, move on instead of physically somebody lifting all of the stuff.
Right. Exactly. So also...
Plus it looks better.
Right. Absolutely.
At the end of the day, let's be honest.
One of the things that they would like to get started on, and a lot of it's going to hinge on whether they get a big grant. They're still waiting on word on whether the city is going to be funded through any of its projects with the Appalachian Grant Program.
Yes.
And one of the things they want to do is a complete overhaul of the memorial building, whatever that would be, whether it's a rebuild, a renovation, but they call it a complete rehabilitation. Yep. Of a building that, you know, dates back to 1936. That is the main administrative center.
She passed her prime. Let's just be honest about
that.
Right.
So, you know, they're going to, you know, I think they're talking about taking the building and completely doing a redo as opposed to rebuilding. But that hinges on grant money. They already have a couple grants lined up, not huge ones, but a couple grants lined up to study the flooding problem.
Yes.
Randy Evans thinks not only do they want to eliminate the flooding, but if you've noticed, a lot of the city's recreation areas are near the creeks.
Yes.
So when you have flooding, sometimes that hinders, especially at Eddie Jones Park, you know, where there's ball fields.
We have this absolutely gorgeous park and can use it, I don't even know, 50% of the time is valid.
Right. And the ball fields down along High Street are there, of course, along the creek.
Yep.
The bike path that people like to use.
Manpower Park.
Sometimes you might have to have your wading boots to walk on that bike path.
Absolutely.
It leaves, of course, the coating of mud all the time. So it's a two-pronged thing. It wants to eliminate the flooding, but that would enhance the parks and really maybe set the table to do some park improvements.
Yes.
Because you don't want to spend a lot of money and see it underwater, right?
You're right. And, you know, you go to all these other places and you see some of the, like, really cool parks and the amenities that some of them have. And you're like, man, I would love to contribute something to our area and help do things like that. But you can't while it floods.
Right. Exactly.
You know, there's no point.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I mean, a lot is on Randy's plate. Another thing that he's in the process of doing, I think the application deadline has passed to this, although if they don't get enough good applications, they may, you know, continue the search process. But they're going to recreate the recreation director's position.
Okay.
Because there always has been a city recreation director. It's not been a full-time position, but... the Red Diamond Club, which is a support club for the city, or really for local recreation, but they work with the city. They basically run, you know, the ball programs, but there's not been a city person that is designated to necessarily work with them, even though a lot of folks in other positions already have.
Yeah.
But the recreation director's position, it's well timed because they really need somebody to be in charge of that, but also the pool manager position, which has been held by Kaylee Folks Lower ever yeah. since she got out of college, I think.
Yeah.
Well, she is not going to be able to do it again now. I mean, just
she has a little baby.
This past year, of course, you know, she became a mommy.
Yeah.
And so they're going to put the recreation director and pool manager's position together. It's called recreation director, I think. That's the title I've seen. But it will include managing the pool and the recreation programs.
Okay.
So that position will be hired pretty soon, well before the summer, I'm sure, to kind of lead that. So that's another new thing that's coming down the pike. Also, this is out of sight, maybe out of mind, but this is a nice thing for people that do this. And maybe more people do kayaking around here than you think. But they've got a new boat ramp and kayak launch out at Hammertown Park.
Yes.
Hammertown Lake and Park.
Have they done that already, or is it in the works?
It has not been opened yet officially, but the physical work, I think, is mainly...
That's so good.
It's mainly done, and it's not where the current boat ramp is. You know, right when you come into the park, on the park side, right off Hammertown Lake Road, you go by the picnic area and the shelter house all the way down to the end of that road, and then down that hill is where the... boat ramp and kayak launches.
Okay,
you know how you go down and, turn around?
There's a big rock down there.
I've not seen it, but that's where I'm told that it is. And Randy Evans said that, you know, they will have some, you know, opening ceremony there to celebrate that. But that work is pretty much done. It's just January.
Yeah.
All right. So,
I mean, I guess you could be out kayaking right now if you wanted to be, but.
Right. Exactly. But that's some of the things that are going on in the city of Jackson. Really a lot, and we'll have a detailed story summarizing some of those things that will be in Saturday's paper. Now, Wellston Mayor Anthony Brenner gave a similar speech the week before at that Wellston City Council meeting, and we've got a story on that too that will go in next Wednesday.
Okay.
And next week, maybe when we're on TV, we'll talk about all the things going on there, and there is a lot there. So many infrastructure projects, just as there are in Jackson, have gone on in Wellston with, on a couple of the main drags. There are a couple of the main streets, complete overhaul of water lines and sewer lines. That sounds like boring stuff, but talk about how important that is. Millions of dollars put into that. And, you know, one of the next things you're going to do is build a new water plant. Water treatment plant that will be on the south side. It's not where the current water treatment plant is by General Mills. It will be a new one, and they will close the north water treatment plant, which is on Lake Alma Road.
And 7 million years old.
Right, exactly. And you know, I tell you, you know, with these facilities, you know, first of all, you want them to work right, but the EPA is tough. You know, they make you do all that sampling and so forth, and, you know, you don't want anything to go wrong there. And it's just... those things under the ground and these plants or whatever, they wear out. They wear out. And Wellston, like Jackson, has been successful in getting a lot of grant money to pay for a lot of that, either grants or no-interest loans or low-interest loans to make it happen. And also, both Wellston and Jackson have income taxes. I know people don't like to pay taxes, but most of the time when you get outside money, you need to have other money, local money, to go with it, either as a match or for related work that has to do with it, whether it's engineering or whatever that goes with that. So another thing we want to mention on Wellston City Government, at the most recent meeting there, and this was already in the paper, they needed a new at-large council member. That is because they had some people not running in this last election.
Okay.
The person who had served as the at-large member, Walter Bub Norris, became the fourth ward council. I mean, he lives in the fourth ward. They had a vacancy there, so he moved over there.
Right.
That left his at-large spot open. And so they advertised that they're looking for an at-large member because, you know, they were short after the election because not enough people ran. Tammy Phillips, and there you see her picture. That is her speaking there about becoming the new council member. She is the new at-large councilwoman in Wellston, taking the spot vacated there by Bub Norris. And Tammy Phillips, anybody who knows anything about Wellston or has lived in Wellston knows how much Tammy Phillips has done to improve Wellston. She has retired from the VA Medical Center over in Chillicothe. She was active before, but she has come more active since her retirement. She is the, I think the word is president of Make Wellston Beautiful.
Okay.
And Make Wellston Beautiful has basically, for a number of years, ever since the city of Wellston ran into major financial problem 10 years or so ago, Make Wellston Beautiful is a nonprofit private support group that has basically run the recreation programs in Wellston. And they have great recreation programs in Wellston. They always have. It's a baseball slash softball town. And they have those great facilities over there on State Route 327 there on the north end. And they have built, they've been able to, they did over, I think, several million dollars worth of improvements with an ODNR grant that was improved last year.
Yes.
And of course, one of the things they want to do is build a campground there. And the city is doing that, of course, with the support of Make Wellston Beautiful. But, you know, they got lighting at those ballparks. They redid one of the ball fields.
Cool how they're all working together.
A new soccer field, you know, all that stuff. But Tammy has been the driver for some of that. And she's done other things through Make Wellston Beautiful, too. And they had some very good candidates. But, I mean, Tammy Phillips, I mean, talk about, you know, earning the chance to be a Wellston City Councilwoman. You know she'll work. And she, and you know that she knows what's going on, and she has the best interest of the city at heart.
Yep.
And so she is on the job now, not officially. She has to be sworn in, but she was picked by Wellston City Council. If she's not already sworn in, she maybe will be at the next meeting that is coming up very soon. So congratulations to Tammy Phillips.
Yep.
Okay, MacArthur Village Council. We go to Vinton County now.
Yes.
They had they have met a couple times already here in January, and at their last meeting, the Wild Turkey Festival Committee folks were there. Now, that seems on down the road, but that's in May, and you don't put those festivals together.
It's
you
not far away.
A month out. They have already, we'll announce this soon, they already have a tentative entertainment schedule set, but here are some of the visitors from the Wild Turkey Festival Committee, which we know very well. We work with them especially a lot last year when we were fortunate enough to be named the Grand Marshal.
Yeah, wasn't that cool? Cool. It was
the march and the parade and everything. And we're just regular folks. But anyway, that is Vicki Beckley, who is the secretary, Bill Beckley, her husband, who is the president of the committee. And over there on the right is Chris Cram, who has been with the festival committee forever and ever. And I know he's kind of like over the Queen's contest. Mm-hmm. He has been for years. But anyway, they were there to once again get permission to close the streets and all like that. And whenever you have a festival that is a street festival, you've got to have cooperation between, you know, your municipal government.
Sure.
And your business people and, of course, the festival people. And so they got approval to close the streets. The dates, it's just as normal. It's from Wednesday, May the 1st at midnight to Sunday evening, May the 5th. The festival actually runs Thursday through Sunday. They close the streets, I think, on Wednesday to kind of set it up. But it's on a kind of a two-block or three-block section right there in the middle of town, right where the traffic light is, the courthouse. And so they're all set, and we'll be hearing much more about that. But one of the things that was also authorized, and I didn't know this figure, it's interesting, the committee and council agreed that the committee would pay the village $500 for services connected to the festival.
Okay.
Because, you know, there's a lot of things that happen. Water, sewer.
Trash.
Street work.
Yeah,
like that.
Cleaning.
And my guess is that $500 is a deal, a real good deal.
Yeah.
So anyway, so good cooperation there, and they are always able to work out how to do police protection. You need extra police protection, extra security then. So there's always issues on how that's going to be provided and who is going to pay for it and like that. And so you talk about it and work that out in January, not in May. So that story, by the way, about their visit to the MacArthur Village Council will be in Saturday's paper as well.
Okay.
All right. Sam Brady, who is the CEO and president of the Jackson County Economic Development Partnership.
Yes.
All right. He is going to have his big, big public event of the year. It's called an appreciation reception. Mm-hmm. They've been doing this. Jennifer Jacobs, his predecessor, did this, and maybe even the person before her. They usually did this like in November, December, but the last year or two, it's been in January.
Okay.
And so it's going to be Monday, evening at the Park's Edge Event Center.
Very good.
And it's a public event, but it's mainly for the people involved in economic development and the partners and the sponsors. Mm-hmm. Economic development technically is not government. They need to have the support, though, of government and the local business
yes.
community. Because, you know, Sam and the staff of three or four there, you know, that's their full-time jobs. They work to create economic development. It isn't just that you raise your hands outside and say, hey, come here and locate
Please
in Jackson
come
County.
To Jackson County.
Or if you're an existing businesswoman like you are, you know, there's things where you can use some support, consulting.
They've helped us so much.
I know. That's why I brought that up.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, you talk about, you think about economic development and you think about the big plan. Well, retaining jobs is probably just as important as getting new jobs.
And, you know, it doesn't have to be a plant that comes in and has 500 jobs. It can be a new business that has 5 really good jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Or helping a business grow a little bit to add those 5 jobs.
Right. I mean, put it this way. I suppose that, you know, you could make an argument there, but what is more secure, Jennifer? A place where you have one major employer that has 10,000 jobs, or you have 50 places that have 50 jobs.
Right.
What's probably more secure? I'd say the 50 times 50.
I would say you're right.
Right, because all your eggs are not in
yes,
one basket.
Yes, absolutely.
And especially if you have corporate ownership and, you know, they're...
You never know.
Right, exactly. You know, they're invested in the community, but it's the big picture for them always.
Yes.
All right, but as far as the appreciation reception, what Sam does with this and his staff, they always do a great job. It's to celebrate economic development successes. It's to acknowledge the people who work with economic development, and it's to say thank you to the people who financially support economic development. Usually, a lot of the local governments throw in money. The Chamber of Commerce may throw in some money.
Yep.
But it's also businesses large and small that make contributions. It's not required, but, you know, it's really necessary. So our economic development partnership, they have an office over there on Veterans Drive. They have been very successful, relatively speaking, creating and retaining jobs in Jackson County.
They do great work.
It should never be overlooked. And this is kind of like a public event to kind of like underscore all that.
Yep.
So that is Monday evening at the Park's Edge Event Center. Our Jeremiah Shaver will be there, and we will have coverage, of course, on the back end. The speaker will be, I almost forgot that. They got a named speaker. A lot of people may not have heard of her, but she's very important. She is the head person for economic development in the state of Ohio, not Jobs Ohio, but the government.
Like the state of Ohio.
The
all
Ohio,
of Ohio
Department of Development. Lydia Mihalik is her name.
Nice.
And she was the mayor of Findlay and was very successful creating jobs there. And there is Lydia. She will be the keynote speaker there at the appreciation reception. Sam says for the second year, they're going to also bestow to a local person the James A. Rhodes Leadership Award. And that usually goes to somebody, there's not much of a precedent for it, but it's to award and recognize and honor somebody who has supported economic development, maybe very publicly or maybe privately behind the scenes, but they've been important.
Wonderful.
Last year, if I remember correctly, I'm going on memory, but I believe it was Mike Evans
okay.
who recently retired. I think he's still consulting some. He was one, of course, the big executives with Bellisio
yes,
Foods and
for sure.
an all-around super nice
He's
guy,
a sweetheart,
if I may editorialize
yeah.
a little bit. All right. We'll go to the criminal justice front now, and the Vinton County Sheriff's Office has got some reports that have been in the news that we want to tell you about.
Okay.
All right. A couple of traffic-related things that turned into a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that funny how that works?
Weird.
But this was one that occurred last Sunday on January 21st. And it involved a suspect named Osman D. Rodriguez Martinez. And there he is. And it ended up in a vehicle pursuit that covered 2 counties.
Oh, my.
Vinton County and Jackson County. And what happened was this press release came out on Sunday, but it actually happened on Saturday, just last Saturday. But they were trying to conduct a traffic stop on State Route 32 in Vinton County. The vehicle failed to pull over. At that point, they didn't know it was Mr. Rodriguez Martinez. A pursuit ensued all the way into Jackson County, eastbound into Jackson County. The vehicle was finally stopped, no wreck or anything. The
person was identified. He is a 50-year-old Osmond D. Rodriguez Martinez from New York State. There was a female passenger and child in the car as well.
Oh, no.
The deputies determined that he was arrested for fleeing, obstructing official business, and child endangerment. And the reason was because of some other things that were found in the car. But the female passenger and her child were also detained after deputies discovered that she was an illegal immigrant from Honduras in Central America with deportation papers out of the state of New Jersey. United States Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement, better known as ICE, was contacted. And guess what? They said, we don't want her. Now, this is something that I've noticed from covering law enforcement
Interesting.
Locally.
Yeah, you don't hear about it a lot around here.
I'm not trying to make a political statement. But this person was an illegal immigrant or an undocumented alien is another way to say it, the politically correct thing. But anyway, somebody, it's established that they're illegally in the country. They're captured. Maybe they did something wrong on top of that. But then the federal enforcement agency that was supposed to keep them from coming in doesn't want them.
Because they're already taxed.
Does something seem wrong with that?
I mean, and then you've got a child to deal with on top of that situation.
Right, exactly. So anyway.
It's a mess.
Right. So that was one of the traffic stops in Vinton County that we were talking about. There was another one that occurred on last Monday. Once again, a traffic stop was made on U.S. Route 50 near Allensville in the western part of the county. Deputies discovered during that stop that the vehicle was stolen out of Columbus. The driver was Amber Green, 41, of Allensville. That's local, of course.
Uh-oh.
She's arrested and charged with receiving stolen property. There is Amber Green right there.
Not good.
Now, a lot of times what happens is, you know, well, why wasn't Amber charged with auto theft? Well, at the time that she was stopped, they probably didn't know for sure whether she stole the car. They just know she was in a stolen car.
Right.
And that's called receiving stolen property.
Okay.
They will sort it out. A lot of times, if they think you stole the car, but they can't prove that, you still have it. And that's a crime, too. And I believe that felony is just about as bad as actually
stealing it.
Right, exactly. So those are two of the reports that we have had or will have in the Telegram from Vinton County. Okay, we've talked about the problem of homelessness. Okay, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, you look on national TV 100%. And they talk about it in the cities and you see the tent cities and all like that. You don't hear about it or see it as much in the rural areas, including Jackson and Vinton counties.
But yet it still exists.
We know that it's there. The Jackson County Homelessness Committee was started, I've been around so long that it's hard to remember the years, but, you know, at least 10 years, maybe. That committee is there. They work out of the Christ Church of Jackson. It's a private sector. But anyway, they're having an event next Tuesday, January the 30th. It will be from 1:30 to 4:30 at the church. And they are calling it a point in time count. They're going to try to determine. They're going to try to help people who are homeless. They're going to try to get people who know about the homelessness to tell them about it. And they're going to try to get resources also in the hands of the homeless, as well as information on how they can be helped. There will be a hot meal and beverages provided to everybody who comes there. There will be supplies and resources such as hygiene supplies, cold weather supplies, giveaways, HIV testing, Hep C testing and treatment, Naloxone, referrals for housing assistance, mental health services, and case management.
Okay.
The count is an annual count of individuals who are sleeping in unsheltered locations. This count provides an accurate record of what homelessness looks like in the community, which help identify areas of need for planning purposes. The data can also be used to help get funding and help.
So, okay, that's win-win.
You know, it's hard enough to count people where you know where they are, but when you don't know where they are or they're moving around, that's tough. So this is where they really need the public's help and referrals to try to get people who need this help, who could be called homeless, there so they can be counted and helped, and also to get information.
Okay.
So that is 1:30 to 4:30 next Tuesday. Are you experiencing unsheltered homelessness, or do you know somebody who is? If you do, try to get that information and go to this event or get information to somebody who is going to that event. And, you know, Jennifer, we hear about people, you know, that are sleeping in parks and restrooms and like that. Yep. That has happened here. But sometimes what I hear, the homelessness, it's not that stark, but it's there. It's people who are what they call couch surfing.
Yes.
They don't have a house. They stay with friends. It's temporary.
Yep.
They may sleep in their car sometimes in parking lots, when especially if the weather isn't bad. So it's a serious situation. So it's one of those unseen problems there. And it may not be, you know, what you see in the cities, but like, you know, we both agree it's there.
It's there for sure.
All right. In Vinton County, there is a very progressive group that is addressing the cancer situation. Mm-hmm. They call themselves the Vinton County Cancer Research Group.
Yes.
Last Thursday, that, by the way, is Randy Yates, who yep. I believe there on the right, he's with the fire department. He's also the leader, the chairman, president, whatever, of this group. And on his left is Dr. Becky Houston, who was the speaker. They had what they call a community roundtable event mm-hmm. last Thursday evening, you know, just a week ago, there at the Vinton County Community Building to give information about how the cancer, this cancer research group can help, and also to provide information to cancer patients and their families. One of the things that they have done, and man, this is fantastic because this is just a private volunteer group,
yep.
no paid staff.
They've done a lot of work.
They have distributed $13,500 in gas cards to help people get to hospitals in 2023. You know, we've heard many times in individual cases, anecdotally, that, it's hard enough to deal with a cancer situation. And even if you have insurance coverage, there's all these ancillary costs,
yes.
associated costs that aren't
so
covered,
much.
As well as, you know, any disruption that you may have from work and other obligations. I mean, it truly is a stressor. That's why this cancer research group is there in Vinton County, a wonderful group. This is the first time that I know of that they've had a roundtable. They hope to have other events like that in the future. Red Thompson Jr. was there, too. And we'll have coverage in an upcoming edition of the Telegram about their good work. And you wonder how much cancer there is. Sometimes, that stat is hard to pull as well. But they gave this stat. There are 92 active cancer cases in Vinton County. 92. And there were in the county this year, and there were 467 last year. So remember, we're only in January right now.
Correct.
So there will be more cases that get identified.
I think a lot of this started because this group realized that there was this pocket of this strange brain cancer that was happening in a particular neighborhood there in downtown MacArthur. And so they started doing
I remember that now.
About it just right. as a group. Like, this isn't right. There's something
right.
amiss here that all these people have brain cancer.
Right.
That live in a neighborhood.
Right, exactly. You know.
So, and then it's just kind of gone from there.
Right. Well, regardless of what the cause is, and, you know, that always seems to be a mystery sometimes.
Yeah.
Theories and surmises and guesses
yep.
on what is causing cancer, or especially in a cluster.
Yes.
But, you always look at some substance situation or environmental situation mm-hmm. there. But anyway, the more information and support you have, the better off.
Yes. So 100%.
Hats off to the Vinton County Cancer Research Group. Okay, we're going to go to the sports side. We just talked about cancer. Let's do a feel-good story.
Yeah.
How about those Jackson basketball Iron Ladies?
Yes.
Here they are.
So this, good.
This is not the whole team, but the reason we've got their picture is these are the seniors, the six seniors who are part of this team that has been so good for 4 years. And this year, this was senior night. The season isn't over, but they celebrated senior night last Wednesday evening. Pretty big midweek crowd. At Jackson High School. These six girls are the seniors on a team that right now is 14-2. All they have done, Jennifer, is win three straight
yeah.
Frontier Athletic Conference championships. They didn't share the title in 2020 and 2022-23, and this year they've not lost a game in the conference. They've already won it. They have one game left. But they've already won an undisputed title. So three straight conference titles.
But they want to go undefeated.
They've won 20. Yes, they won. They have one game against Chillicothe next Saturday on the road.
Yep.
That would make a perfect game. And then you get a special trophy called a gold ball if you go through the conference undefeated.
Yep.
But They've won 21 games in a row in the conference. These girls were sophomores the last time they lost a conference game. That's pretty special, I think. But let's identify these girls there. I've put them back up there, Hayden, so we can see their picture there when I give you their names. From left to right is Kenzie Davis, TJ Carpenter, Maddie Walburn, Sydney Hughes, Leah Willett, and Hattie Mollett. Now, let me tell you something special. These girls are all great. The four girls on the left have started since they were freshmen.
Yeah.
That's wild. Three of those girls, now get this, and this is, what a story. TJ Carpenter, Maddie Walburn, and Sydney Hughes. It isn't over, it isn't officially, but unless they get knocked off the track, all three of them are going to be valedictorians of their senior class.
Unbelievable.
How about that? That is really special.
And Maddie was here on the show yesterday and said that she had just signed to go play basketball at Otterbein.
That is right.
That's so cool.
That announcement came out. TJ has not committed yet, but she's definitely college material.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to college to play basketball as well. And Kenzie is going to Wilmington.
Nice.
Of course, Kenzie is the younger sister of Traylon Davis, mm-hmm. who is playing Division I football at West Virginia.
Just a little bit of athletic genes in that family, huh?
Right. And, you know, the athletic family connections are strong. TJ Carpenter, her little sister Sydney, is the other starter, the fifth starter on that team. She's just a sophomore. And her father, Chad Carpenter, is the assistant coach. And Maddie Walburn, of course, her father, Matt Walburn, one of the great basketball players
who comes
to Jackson High School in his own right, he is the head coach.
Yes.
And Gracie Walburn, who is Maddie's sister and now a teacher at the middle school, she played basketball and is also on the staff.
Right. So super cool.
Right. And so, wonderful, wonderful situation there for that team. And as I said, they're not through. They've still got regular season games to go, and they've also got the tournament ahead of them as well. Speaking of basketball, we have three boys basketball games on the air tonight.
Awesome.
Oh, I want to go back to girls basketball. I almost forgot this because it kind of surprised us. Weston Hale is a first-year coach of the Oak Hill girls basketball
team.
Okay. They are rebuilding. They've got a lot of young players. They didn't win a game last year, all right? And it's been a tough year this year. They've lost every game, and I think they've only had one or two close games. It's just been – it's tough. It's a learning year. I mean, and I use that word euphemistically. But last night, they played Pike Western at home, and Pike Western had only won one game. Guess what? Oak Hill 38, Pike Western 36.
Woohoo!
And so my guess is they were just as thrilled as those Jackson girls were with winning the championship. So we want to congratulate the Oak Hill Lady Oaks for hanging in there, having the fortitude, and Coach Weston Hale, all the hard work that they went through, the tough sledding, I mean, I'm sure they felt it was all worth it.
Yeah.
They won that game by 2 points last night. Some of the guys who were in here doing the board, Hayden Milliken and Blaine Hale, I was down the hall working on something else. I just heard them yell just like the girl. they've been kind of fans extended, because they've worked some of the games and they were so glad to see them win. And Corey Ruby, who was our play-by-play broadcaster, he was so excited.
Yes.
I don't know whether he made it to school this morning. That's how excited he was. But tonight on the boys' side, Miami Trace comes to Jackson. Coach Max Morrow's team is 12-4. They've won 10 games in a row.
Woo,
how about that? Nice. 2-4 at one time, now 12-4. Miami Trace is in first place. They are considered the toughest team in the league, and they're coming to Jackson. Miami Trace beat Jackson fairly easily early in the season.
Okay.
So that will be a big game at
Revenge.
Jackson tonight.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They hope to get it, but, it will be a tough assignment, but they've been hot. So we'll see what happens. I know they would appreciate a lot of fannies in the seats to support the team.
Sure.
Also tonight on the radio, Pike Eastern will be at Oak Hill, and Athens will be at Vinton County.
Okay.
And, of course, Coach N.J. Kite has the Vikings in first place. And so they hope to hold serve up there on the home court. This is kind of sports, and we want to mention it. These girls deserve credit, too. The Jackson Middle School cheerleaders placed first in a competition all the way up at Canton McKinley High School.
Way to go, girls.
And they had finished first in something and another one in December. And here they are posing with their banner and their trophy right in front of them. I'm going to give the girls' names from left to right in the front row. Caden Serian, Aubrey Stepp, Rylan Spears, and Adeline Brenner. In the back row, Bree Sturgill, Katrin Strockmeister, Abby Barnett, Daisy Howard, and Ellie Parker. And the coaches, got to give them credit, Tiffany Fout and Toria Brown.
Yep.
So congratulations to those girls. You can't do any better than first in the state. They were in the small school division in what is called, it was a state thing, Ohio High School Cheerleading and Dance Coaches Association, best in the state tournament.
Nice.
And they were first in the junior high, non-building, small champions division. There were other schools that finished just behind them. Union Local, Barnesville, Green, Marlington, Strasburg. That's all over the state. So congratulations to our middle school cheerleaders. So that is the news. I've run out of time. Some of the stuff we didn't get to talk about, maybe we'll talk about next week.
Absolutely. That sounds great. And Pete, so a lot of news here to get through, and we'll try to get the rest to you here at the beginning of the week if we can. So thank you for spending your morning with us. You have your Jackson Ironman Red on, which means you're going to be out. Dan and Pete, I assume, will be out doing the game tonight.
Right. We'll be there to try to help the Ironmen get over the hump against the Miami Trace Panthers.
That's right. So go local teams. We're here for you.
All right. Very good.
All right. Well, have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and we'll see you right back here on Monday.
Right. And thank you to our man, Hayden Jarvis.
Yes, thank you for
our
Hayden.
High school intern, just seamless on those pictures, wasn't
That's right.
It?
Doing good.
All right.
Killing it. We'll see you on Monday. Thanks for watching.
This just in.
The Telegram News has a new website.
TheTelegramNews.com.
Same dedicated coverage.
Same trustworthy news with a brand new look.
Covering Jackson and Benton County and surrounding areas.
Locally owned and operated, TheTelegramNews.com has its finger on the pulse of the community.
Stay up to date on local events, high school sports, and breaking news.
TheTelegramNews.com.
Subscribe today at TheTelegramNews.com.
Check it out.